Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, July 19th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, New City Manager Makes First Midland Appearance, by Stuart Doreen. Midland is home for us. Those were the words from new Midland City Manager Tommy Gonzalez, who spoke to local media Tuesday at Midland City Hall. Gonzalez made an appearance before his July 31st start date, along with his wife and their two sons, to provide his first comments since the Midland City Council made Gonzalez its selection to be the city's chief executive. Gonzalez is an experienced city manager with previous stops in Lubbock, Harlingen, Irving, and most recently El Paso, where he spent 9 years. City officials have stated since identifying Gonzalez as their selection to replace Robert Patrick that Gonzalez can help Midland identify the tools needed to help the city grow. Gonzalez said, based on information he's seen from Midland City Council retreat held earlier this year, and comments they made during and since the interview process, he understands downtown and the quality of place are important to this council. He also stated that destination attractions are something the council is very interested in. We want the state to see that more and more, and then have more things come to Midland, Gonzalez said, so that we can be an attraction and a destination, so that the jobs that are needed here, the development that's needed here, the growth that we all want to see, all of that can coalesce with each other. Gonzalez stated he looks forward to working with the staff currently in place and to develop strong teams from within and creating a strong succession program to develop team members. And I've been fortunate to really work with different organizations and develop those teams, Gonzalez said. And we're really looking forward to doing that here in Midland. Gonzalez also made it a point multiple times how Midland is not like any other community. That is why, before he proposes any strategies, he said it is important to have meetings some council members have set up with people inside the community, and to listen when he meets with residents at public events during the first couple of weeks in August. The mayor and council, having a strong vision for the community and wanting to make Midland stand out, and doing that through deeds, not through words, Gonzalez said. So I really think that there's a lot of opportunity. I don't want to necessarily share those right now because I think that's what the listening part is for. Just because something was done in another city doesn't mean it's the right thing for Midland. This article is entitled Commission Hears Plans on Grasslands Park by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission heard plans for an upgrade to Grasslands Park that would make the West Midland Neighborhood Park unlike any in the city. Two Parks and Recreation Advisory Commission members, Amber Voithofer and Laura Smith, who are also residents inside the Grassland Estates area, presented a 2023-24 project proposal that would do three things. Create a beautiful 5.3-acre park with an engaging atmosphere that includes nature features, built-in slides, wooden structures, climbing walls, and terrace seating, inspired by the private park inside Woodland Park in North Midland. Design a safe environment for creative play with no plastic play structures, a gazebo update, a water mist system and or bubble pad, and pump track for Strider bikes and scooters. Require a maintenance plan to ensure quality over time, including turf for high traffic areas, a budget for annual park improvements, and encouraging Midland ISD to use the park for its students at Scarborough Elementary. Grasslands Park, 2500 Crowley Boulevard, is located in the Grassland Estates area near Scarborough Elementary and the Nueva Vista Golf Course. The park is up for a $200,000 equipment upgrade as approved by the Midland City Council. Voighthofer and Smith made the presentation to ask if the city would support upgrades beyond the playgrounds seen in other neighborhood parks across Midland. The commission ended up voting to recommend that the $200,000 be temporarily held to allow commission members to talk with the commission's liaison on the Midland City Council, John Norman, about the possibilities for Grasslands Park. City and commission officials were impressed with the presentation and the elements of the proposed Grasslands Park makeover. They mentioned issues that could come with initial or future construction/maintenance. There was a concern from a fellow commission member that while she liked the project, there was a worry that a nicer neighborhood park would not go over well with residents in other areas of Midland, or creates an equity issue. Lastly, city officials expect discussions will continue about Grasslands Park, including conversations with neighboring homeowners associations about plans moving forward. This article is entitled MCSO, Midlander Arrested for Murder Following Grand Jury Indictment, by Mercedes Cordero, staff writer. A Midland man has been arrested in connection with a 2022 murder case, according to Midland County Jail records. Bradley Lane McDaniel was arrested Friday following a grand jury indictment from the 441st District Court for murder, the Midland County Sheriff's Office shared on Facebook. The MCSO Warrant Division, along with the U.S. Marshals Lone Star Fugitive Task Force and the Department of Public Safety Criminal Investigation, helped locate McDaniel. McDaniel was being held Tuesday on a $1 million bond. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Morse Expects Oil Below $90 a Barrel, by Julia Fanzeres, Bloomberg. Oil is unlikely to fall below $70 a barrel, but it would take a wildcard event to push prices above $90, said Ed Morse, global head of commodity research at Citigroup, Inc. Brent crude prices are finding support near $70 a barrel due to several fundamental factors, Morse said in a Bloomberg television interview. For starters, OPEC Plus doesn't want oil prices to fall below that level and has shown that it will slash production in order to keep prices afloat. Another factor, the U.S.'s commitment to refilling its strategic petroleum reserve with prices around $70 a barrel. Oil is unlikely to rise above $90 a barrel with supply tightness factored in. But Morse notes that extreme weather events, including hurricanes, could change the outlook. Additionally, the obstacles to invest in fossil fuels and reduction in demand are leading to more market volatility. The oil market will move between supply shortages and oversupply, said Morse. But oversupply won't be big enough to get us down to $20, or let alone negative prices, and the undersupply won't be big enough to get us over $100. But it will mean volatility in the market. This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Wednesday, July 19th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, New City Manager Makes First Midland Appearance, by Stuart Doreen. Midland is home for us. Those were the words from new Midland City Manager Tommy Gonzalez, who spoke to local media Tuesday at Midland City Hall. Gonzalez made an appearance before his July 31st start date along with his wife and their two sons, to provide his first comments since the Midland City Council made Gonzalez its selection to be the city's chief executive. Gonzalez is an experienced city manager with previous stops in Lubbock, Harlingen, Irving, and most recently El Paso, where he spent 9 years. City officials have stated since identifying Gonzalez as their selection to replace Robert Patrick that Gonzalez can help Midland identify the tools needed to help the city grow. Gonzalez said, based on information he's seen from Midland City Council retreat held earlier this year, and comments they made during and since the interview process, he understands downtown and the quality of place are important to this council. He also stated that destination attractions are something the council is very interested in. We want the state to see that more and more, and then have more things come to Midland, Gonzalez said, so that we can be an attraction and a destination, so that the jobs that are needed here, the development that's needed here, the growth that we all want to see, all of that can coalesce with each other. Gonzalez stated he looks forward to working with the staff currently in place and to develop strong teams from within and creating a strong succession program to develop team members. And I've been fortunate to really work with different organizations and develop those teams, Gonzalez said. And we're really looking forward to doing that here in Midland. Gonzalez also made it a point multiple times how Midland is not like any other community. That is why, before he proposes any strategies, he said it is important to have meetings some council members have set up with people inside the community, and to listen when he meets with residents at public events during the first couple of weeks in August. The mayor and council, having a strong vision for the community and wanting to make Midland stand out, and doing that through deeds, not through words, Gonzalez said. So I really think that there's a lot of opportunity. I don't want to necessarily share those right now, because I think that's what the listening part is for. Just because something was done in another city doesn't mean it's the right thing for Midland. This article is entitled, New MISD Police Chief Wants to Change Culture. Law enforcement discusses discipline at MISD campuses during Leadership Summit. By Ben Schaffer, staff writer. Members of MISD and Midland Law Enforcement discussed ways educators, campus police, and local law enforcement can work together to minimize behavioral issues at MISD campuses during the district's Leadership Summit. District educators and administrators heard from MISD Police Department Chief Carlos Ortiz and Midland Police Department Chief Seth Herman, and personnel from Midland County Juvenile Probation, members of the Behavioral Task Force started by Mayor Lori Blong. Herman said the Midland Police Department may have officers on MISD campuses to assist MISD police during the upcoming school year. He encouraged Midland educators to get to know these officers and report any criminal activity they come across to help cut down illegal or unwelcome activity in schools and at students' homes. Herman added that although Midland Police Department can assist MISD officers and will certainly respond to life-threatening events like an active shooter, MPD is about 20% understaffed. As Midland's population continues to grow around and crime rates rise, MPD will have to focus its manpower on the streets, he said. That being said, we will assist the Midland Independent School District in any way, shape, or form that we can. Because the kids of our officers go to your schools. My children go to your schools. My wife works at your school. So we have a vested interest, Herman said. Recently hired MISD Police Chief Ortiz said his department also have staffing issues, with 13 of its 22 positions currently filled. Ortiz said he's been working with Herman and Sheriff David Kreiner to place off-duty police officers at MISD campuses. "It's going to take some time," Ortiz said, "as I try to hire more officers, get them out there to junior highs and high schools, and of course the elementaries." Hiring more officers and continuing to partner with local law enforcement will provide a stronger police presence on MISD campuses, according to Ortiz. He said MISD police has 17 in the pipeline. "Every school deserves to have that officer there," Ortiz said. "That presence has to be there, and that consistency. At least you see them every once in a while, not every 6 weeks or every 8 weeks. We want to change that mindset, that culture of, yes, you're assigned to Lee freshmen, but we have to kind of move around and be present everywhere." Vanessa Valdez, supervisor of probation services with Midland County Juvenile Probation, discussed ways MISD staff and local law enforcement can establish a clearer line of communication regarding students on probation. "Once a kid gets put on probation, if it's a deferred, which is a voluntary probation, we send a letter to our district attorney, and they're supposed to send it to someone at the school in the main office who's supposed to disperse it to the campus," Valdez said. "The teachers in attendance wanted detail and clarification regarding the names of probation officers that a student has been assigned. Personnel from the Juvenile Probation Center and educators agreed it would be helpful to disperse a full list of Midland probation officers, along with their contact information, to MISD campuses, so educators could assist students in contacting them when they need to. The panel was asked if they would consider holding students at the Culver Juvenile Justice Center for longer periods of time if a student has committed serious or violent offenses during school. "We have our intake process," said Victoria Davis, Midland County Juvenile Probation Supervisor of Intake and Programs. "It kind of depends on whether or not it's a process and release, whether we just release back to the parent, or be detained. If they are detained, we can hold up to 48 hours before we can see the judge." Davis added that a judge has the final say whether a juvenile offender is released or held at Culver Center for 10 days. This article is entitled "NWS, Current 100-Degree Streak Hits 10 Days" by Stuart Doreen, staff writer. For the second time in as many months, a 100-degree streak has reached 10 days. On Tuesday, the National Weather Service reported a high temperature of 106 degrees, the 10th straight day in July that the thermometer at Midland International hit at least 100 degrees. That streak is tied for the 11th longest in the city's history, and the NWS expects at least three more 100-degree days on Wednesday through Friday. The NWS reported 15 straight days of 100-degree weather in June. Other weather notables include: Tuesday was the 27th 100-degree day in 2023. Tuesday was the 14th 105-degree day in 2023, which is tied for the second most all-time in Midland. There is no rain in the 7-day forecast, according to the NWS. Weather report. Tuesday's high, 106 degrees. Typical high for July 18th, 96 degrees. Tuesday's low, 77 degrees. Typical low for July 18th, 73 degrees. Record high for July 18th, 111 in 1989. Number of straight days at or above 100 degrees, 10 days. Last 10 days. Sunday, 103 degrees. Monday, 103. Tuesday 105, Wednesday 110, Thursday 106, Friday 104, Saturday 103, Sunday 100, Monday 103, Tuesday 106. Next 5 days. Wednesday 106 degrees, Thursday 101 degrees, Friday 102 degrees, Saturday 96 degrees. Most 105 degree days in a year in Midland. 2011, 18 days. 1994, 14 days. 2023, 14 days. Source of this article, National Weather Service. This article is entitled, Oklahoma Considers Natural Gas Manipulation Case, by Rachel Adams Hurd, Bloomberg. Oklahoma Attorney General Gentner Drummond may bring a natural gas market manipulation case related to the 2021 winter storm that drove energy prices to record highs and left millions of people in the dark. Drummond held a news conference on Tuesday morning in Oklahoma City and said he plans to retain outside counsel to pursue a possible lawsuit. He indicated that natural gas marketers are a likely target. It will probably be the most significant lawsuit filed by the state of Oklahoma in its history, Drummond said. Broadly, there are no parameters on the scope of the investigation. After Kansas became the first state to file a lawsuit alleging natural gas market manipulation during Winter Storm Uri, Drummond announced in March that he was reviewing whether similar circumstances existed in Oklahoma. In the Kansas case, State Attorney General Chris Kobach's office is accusing Mercury Energy LLC of buying next-day gas at a key mid-continental hub at irrational prices during the storm. A move, the suit says, artificially inflated prices by hundreds of dollars per million British thermal units. The case was moved from a state district court to a federal court in May. When asked whether Mercury would be involved in the Oklahoma case, Drummond said that generally most of the companies that manipulated the marketing price are outside Oklahoma. If you follow the data, it appears as though there was a short squeeze, Drummond said. Certainly, natural gas marketers could do it again, and I will sue them. Macquarie has previously said it doesn't comment on active litigation. Drummond, a Republican who took office earlier this year, is Oklahoma's third attorney general since Uri. Mike Hunter, who held the position during the storm, announced an investigation in the days after natural gas prices soared to all-time highs. He abruptly resigned just a few months later and was replaced by John O'Connor, who warned he would file multiple lawsuits against oil and gas companies, but later walked that back. Following the storm, Oklahoma paved the way for utilities to issue billions in ratepayer-backed bonds in order to spread out the costs incurred due to all-time high energy prices. Drummond said Tuesday that if a lawsuit is successful, he would work to make sure any recovery is seen by consumers. He also noted that the bonds include so-called clawback provisions. Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, who's facing an impeachment trial, also announced an investigation into potential natural gas market manipulation following the storm, but hasn't brought a case. On Tuesday, Drummond said he would be happy to partner with his counterparts in Texas and Kansas. "I am aware of what Texas and Kansas are doing," he said. "I think we will do it better." This article is called Small Bites. It is entitled 14 Places for Happy Hour Drinks by Morgan Taylor Thomas, staff writer. Many local restaurants carry a happy hour special after regular work hours Monday through Friday. This Small Bites feature looks at a selection of 14 in and around Midland. The Basement, 223 West Wall Street. Cocktail, wine, and beer specials can be enjoyed from 4:30 to 6 p.m. The Blue Door, 4610 North Garfield Street, Suite 1C. Happy hour runs 4 to 7 p.m. and includes a $6 old-fashioned, Pimm's cup, and strawberry lemon drop, and $2 off all craft beer and all glasses of wine. Other drinks include a Chiloma, G&T, and three mocktail options. Buffalo Nickel, 216 North Main Street. Head downtown for an array of specials from 3 to 7 p.m. on drinks like the Gunslinger, orange and coffee liqueur old-fashioned, and various mocktails and alcohol-free beer. City Nights, 7400 West County Road 116. Daily specials and $1 Chilton's make this rowdy fun bar a Midlander favorite for happy hour. Some deals run all day, while others run for a limited time, usually between 3 and 7 p.m. Champs, 4511 North Midkiff Road. Looking for a laid-back, fun-for-all spot for you and your co-workers? From 3 to 6 p.m., enjoy $1 off draft beers. The sports bar also runs a full bar with cocktails and more. Cork and Pig, 200 Spring Park Drive, Suite 200. $10 specialty cocktails, $7 well cocktails, $6 draft and domestic beers, $6 white wine, and $7 red wine can be found from 3 to 6 p.m. The restaurant also has happy hour dips and pizza. Cowboy Prime, 200 Spring Park Drive, Suite 210. Primetime happens 2 to 5 p.m. with deals on drinks, bites, and sushi. Along with mocktails, the bar holds a primetime curated list of specialty drinks sure to satisfy any palate. Hoop and Barrel, 3211 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 21. Along with daily specials such as Wine Down Wednesday, $2 off glass of wine or $6 off bottle until close, the regular happy hour runs 4 to 7 p.m., with $2 off signature drinks and draft beer, and $3 off tapas. Jimmy T's Drive-Thru, 4322 West Illinois Avenue. Those looking for a non-alcoholic but still refreshing sip on their way home can enjoy the happy hour. Buy one, get one Agua Fresca special from 2 to 5 p.m. Flavors include mango, horchata, limeade, and pineapple. La Bodega, 2700 North Big Spring Street. Domestic bottles and a handful of margarita options can be purchased at a happy hour rate from 3 to 6 p.m. Little Woodrose, 3415 North Loop 250 West, Suite 201. From 11 a.m. to 7 p.m., enjoy $1 off select drafts and $4 well liquors. The Patio Draft House, 2101 West Wadley Avenue, Suite 45. Creative and delicious drinks and snacks are offered from 3 to 6 p.m., no reservations required. The Rig, 5701 Starboard Drive, Suite 1. Eats and drinks can be purchased from 4 to 7 p.m. for less than $6. Woody's Hideaway, 5701 Starboard Drive, Suite 5. The sports bar's summer happy hour runs all day Monday and 3 to 7 p.m. through Friday, with $4 select drafts, $5 well liquor, $5 Jim Beam, and $5 Chilton's. This is the obituary column, Wednesday, July 19th. Laura McFadden. Laura McFadden, 65, of Midland, passed away in Midland on Monday, July 17th. Family visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, July 19th at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Graveside service will be at 1 p.m. Thursday, July 20th at Serenity Memorial Gardens. Laura was born April 27, 1958, in Del Rio, Texas. She is survived by her husband, Wendell Fallon, three stepsons, Justin Fallon and wife Michelle, their daughter, Michaela, and son, Colton, Josh Fallon and wife Lindsay, and their son, Jack, and daughter, Olivia, Charlie Watson and fiancée, Josie, and daughter, Emily. In lieu of flowers, please send memorial donations to a charity of your choice. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Lorraine Vargas. Lorraine Vargas passed away unexpectedly on July 12th. She was 56 years old. Her family is deeply saddened and heartbroken by her sudden death. Lorraine was born on November 10th, 1966. Lorraine is survived by her son, Brian Vargas. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Friday, July 21st at Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Marion Daly. Marion Daly, 81, of Midland, passed away on March 31st, 2023. Marion was born in Abilene, Texas, on January 10th, 1942, the fourth child of Seth and Faye Daly, and was raised in Big Lake. Marion was preceded in death by his father Seth, mother Faye, sister Barbara, brother Richard, and sister Susan. He is survived by his sister Rose, his wife of 59 years Judy, two sons Michael and Jeff's wife Deborah, and his two cherished granddaughters, Alyssa and Kristen. Memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Friday, July 21st at St. Luke's United Methodist Church. There will be a reception following the service in the church foyer. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations in Marion's name can be made to St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 3011 West Kansas Avenue in Midland, and the Alzheimer's Association, 4400 North Big Spring Street in Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Wells Funeral Home, and online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Marcus Ibarra. Marcus Daniel Ibarra, age 28, passed away at his residence Sunday, July 16th. Receiving of friends will be held Wednesday, July 19th at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home from 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. with a rosary at 7 p.m. A funeral mass will be held Thursday, July 20th at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church at 10 a.m. Funeral arrangements are under the direction of Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home, and online condolences can be made at asanchestfh.com.
Boost of blueberries. Blueberries are in season right now, and if you aren't tasting the sweet flavor of in-season blueberries, then you're missing out. Blueberries are not only delicious, but quite the nutritional powerhouse. So with that in mind, let's boost your blueberry knowledge. Did you know that blueberries help support brain health? While there are many foods that can be attributed to that, blueberries are a good source of those anthocyanins. Anthocyanins are plant compounds that are responsible for the blue, purple, and red color you see in fruits. They can also help drive improvement in brain function. And when you think about brain function, what comes to mind? For us, it's memory and focus. Those are some important aspects of brain function that we want to keep in good shape for as long as we can. So blueberries are going to be your best friend. The current dietary guidelines for Americans recommends eating 5 to 9 servings of fruits and vegetables per day, including blueberries. That has been associated with a reduced risk of chronic diseases. Also, aside from brain health, research around the benefits of blueberries is looking at how it impacts other aspects of your health. Researchers are also looking at the impact they have on cardiovascular health, exercise, insulin response, and gut health. Whether you are grabbing fresh or frozen blueberries, they are equally nutritious and have so many uses to fill your needs. Did you know that 1 cup of blueberries counts as 1 serving of fruit, contains 80 calories, is a good source of fiber, and has other wonderful nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin K, manganese, and polyphenols? And here's a recipe for Make Ahead Blueberry Pancake. What you need is 2 cups of Kodak cake pancake mix, 1/2 pound of pork sausage, 1 1/3 cup Fairlife skim milk, 2 eggs, 1/4 cup of canola oil, and 1 cup of fruit of your choice, but in this case, blueberries. How it's made: brown the sausage, mix together pancake mix, sausage, milk, eggs, and oil. Grease a 13x9 baking dish. Pour mixture into the baking dish and top with fruit. When you're ready to bake it, preheat the oven to 350 degrees and let the casserole sit on the counter uncovered while the oven comes to temperature. Bake for 35 to 40 minutes or until set.
All right, I am continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for July 15th, 2023. In opinion, waiting periods, background checks, are reforms worth exploring, by Ron Berler. 2 weeks after the funeral for Amory Jo Garza, 10, the first of the Robb Elementary School students to be interred following the Uvalde mass shooting, I phoned the manager of my local Domino's in Stamford, Connecticut, to inquire about a delivery job. Though I've never driven professionally and have been out of the job market since turning 70, I felt confident about my chance of being hired. I have a valid driver's license, I am insured, and have my own car. Since my last citation more than a decade ago, my record has been clean. So I was somewhat surprised when the manager said that while he needed a driver and I sounded like a good candidate, he couldn't hire me on the spot even if I were to ace my interview. First, I'd have to pass a corporate background check. How long would that take, I asked. 2 days, he replied. Roadblocks, even small ones, have an outsized impact on deterrence. They're the sort of guardrails one might expect following Uvalde and Buffalo, Pittsburgh and Las Vegas, Newtown, and so many other communities that should apply to operating other potentially lethal pieces of machinery. I hung up the phone and considered my options. I dialed a Papa John's not far away. Do you conduct a background check as part of your interview process? I asked the assistant manager. What do you mean? He replied. All he really wanted to know was if I'd be available to work a daytime shift from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. He encouraged me to come for an interview that day. It's always heartening when someone recognizes value in your skill set when imminent employment awaits. Yet it was hard to ignore that this particular Papa John's has set its bar for hiring perilously low. About as low as that of federal law regarding the purchase or possession of most firearms, even after adoption of the most recent gun control legislation. Legally, there are limits to the vehicles I can take for a spin. My license, subject to periodic renewal, permits me to drive our Toyota Prius plug-in hybrid and Acura RSX, as well as any other car, SUV, pickup, or U-Haul type truck that I buy, rent, or borrow for non-commercial use. It does not allow me to operate a school bus or dump truck, both of which require a commercial driver's license and weeks, if not months, of specialized training. I suppose I could call my congressman and object to such licensure restrictions, arguing that they infringe upon my constitutionally guaranteed personal freedoms. But he is one of those liberal Democrats, so I doubt he would support me. Instead, I spoke with Aziz Hook, a University of Chicago constitutional law professor who studies the interplay between the Constitution and individual rights and liberties. I asked him why driver regulations go uncontested while the Second Amendment inspires an absolutism among many gun rights advocates that precludes nuance, that fails to distinguish, for instance, between shotguns and assault-style weapons or the appropriate minimum age for possessing particular firearms. Frustratingly, the Constitution provides little counsel. Arbitrariness comes into the law, Hook said, because the Supreme Court has never explained how it knows what a compelling state interest is. Why is it a compelling state interest when the government fights terrorism, for example, but not when it is fighting the pandemic? I asked him if he saw any chance for stricter gun reform legislation. I don't know, he replied. You're asking a question about political morality. But, in fact, legislators have placed limits on numerous so-called personal freedoms in the name of public safety. We pass through mandatory security checks in airports and government buildings. We're required to wear seatbelts on airplanes, cars, and roller coasters. Is it too much to ask that firearms be treated in the same nuanced manner as motorized vehicles? That there must be one set of rules for owning and carrying a handgun, another for purchasing a semi-automatic assault-style rifle, and a third for how much ammo a single clip may hold? To which one could add a fourth. Texas Senator Ted Cruz told Sky News reporter Mark Stone in the wake of the Uvalde killings, "If you want to stop violent crime, the proposals the Democrats have, none of them would have stopped this." A long-standing Democratic proposal has been waiting to lengthen the waiting period prior to completing the purchase of a firearm, allowing time to conduct a thorough background/mental health check and to erect a simple roadblock. Salvador Ramos, the Robb Elementary shooter, purchased his first assault weapon shortly after he turned 18, 1 week before he massacred those 19 students and two teachers, just 2 days before their school year was to end. Had there even been a 10-day waiting period, Ramos's attack might never have taken place. I am continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for July 15, 2023. Community, Alyssa Adair celebrates 20 years of inspiration. In 2003, a branch fell and crushed Alyssa Adair's skull, but that didn't stop her from achieving great things. By Alyssa Adair. July 1, 2003 was my first day ever at church camp, and that morning after a hike, I was sitting beneath the shade of trees discussing the Bible study from the night before when my camp leader screamed for everyone to run. As I stood up and began to run, I reminded myself, "You can run!" I had danced in ballet, tap, and jazz, and had just won the mile in a track meet weeks earlier. I knew I could run. But as I began to run, I was tripped and everything went pitch black. A tree branch had fallen and crushed my skull. I was airlifted to Lubbock Covenant Hospital, where the surgeon shaved my hair off, cut me open from one ear to another, and picked bone and tree debris out of my brain and puzzle-pieced my skull back together. The surgeon told my parents that I was going to die on day 2, and when I lived to day 4, the surgeon was disgusted that God would allow a child to live in my condition, completely paralyzed for the rest of my life. But God and I had other plans. Through God's faithfulness and my determination, I have overcome the impossible and relearned how to move every muscle in my body, from my eyes to my tongue, and not to mention my arms and legs. From day 1, every time I had a doctor or therapist tell me that I can't or won't ever be able to do something, I just smiled and said, "Watch me." And God and I proved them wrong each and every time. I have chosen to glorify God with what He has done in and through my life by focusing on what I have and can do, rather than focusing on what I lost or don't have. When I was in my second year of college, everyone I knew was dating or engaged, and I had never even had a boyfriend, which was very upsetting, but I was reminded of how blessed I was, and remembered that God had a plan for my singleness. That very same week, I received a flyer in the mail to compete in the Miss Texas USA 2013-2014 pageant. Having this flyer, I thought of how I could inspire the state of Texas by sharing all that God had done in and through my life since my accident at the pageant. It was a great idea, but I wasn't sure if I would qualify. That's when I saw the top qualification was, "You can't be married." I thought to myself, "Hot dang, sign me up." What better way was there to be proud of my singleness than by doing this pageant? When I competed in the Miss Texas USA pageant, it was the hardest thing I had ever done in my life, but God used my crooked gait and positive attitude to inspire every other contestant, and I received the award of Miss Congeniality of the state of Texas. I continued competing in 4 more pageants, and each time I got to meet and inspire so many people, all by getting stronger and walking straighter each time. At my 5th and final pageant, I won the title of Miss Elite Global Earth 2017-2018. I am so thankful that because I chose to be proud of my singleness, God used my story to inspire so many lives. I have had the honor to speak at several speaking engagements over the years, and I have been blessed to share my story countless times at the Silver Spur Gun and Blade Show. and I am very excited to say that I have recently finished writing my first two books. The first is on my life story and recovery process after my accident, and the second is on my pageant journey. I am thrilled and can't wait to inspire the world through God's faithfulness in my life through these books. It is hard to believe every challenge that I have faced and overcome over the last 20 years, yet each and every time I literally fall down or life tries to get me down, I stand back up, keep pressing forward, and never give up. It is my hope and desire that God will continue to use my life to inspire others to never give up. Whether it is day two of overcoming a current impossible trial in your life, or it is your 20th year anniversary of overcoming that impossible trial, remember, be proud of who and where you are in life, and never give up. Hi, I'm continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for July 15th, 2023. In opinion, City Manager Saga shows lesson not learned, by Eliel Rosa. In his monumental work, Democracy in America, 1835, French politician Alexis de Tocqueville, an immigrant, recorded his impressions of the New World, the United States of America, and its Republican order. The author's in-depth analysis sought to understand the peculiar nature of the American civic life. One of his most outstanding insights was that the very people involved in public challenges or problems tended to naturally solve collective issues themselves, even bypassing government authorities. People organize themselves. Tocqueville called this argument civil government. There is a strong academic and political perception that such values, so particular in the culture of the first American colonizers, can explain various social phenomena that have historically occurred in the United States, such as, for instance, the fact that America has never embraced socialism as other Western countries have done in such a dramatic way. In the current American reality, however, this is sadly no longer a guarantee. The current phenomenon of political alienation in America, the way I see it as a 21st century immigrant, goes beyond a collective disinterest. It expresses an all-out rejection of the entire political life, expressed through apathy, a reasoning founded on the perception that individuals want to, but cannot change anything in the political system through their efforts and participation beyond the act of just voting. My experience working in over 20 countries of the world in the arena of public policies clearly shows me that the less leaders located in decision-making spheres believe in and practice civic culture values and more in vertical structures of social and political hierarchy, the less these societies prosper. The attitudes of elites and citizens are two sides of the same coin. For this very reason, civic-minded politicians neither deny the reality of conflicting interests, nor are they afraid to make creative agreements with the citizenry. As the father of modern conservatism, Sir Edmund Burke said, "What type of reasoning is this that the decision precedes the discussion? Political representatives are not an association of ambassadors who have divergent and hostile opinions, where each one must preserve his interests as an agent against the interest of a group of other agents." Yes, civic engagement always increases potential costs in political decision-making processes. It is certainly much cheaper to decide things at the stroke of a pen or via a swift unanimous vote. Open communication and improved flow of information always end up challenging the credibility and reputation of people in positions of political power. Nonetheless, the greater the communication between leadership and citizenry, the greater the trustworthiness between them, which will motivate people to engage and collaborate in future issues. The opposite of this, in my humble analysis, just happened at the Midland City Manager vote on Tuesday. Civil government only grows when it is intentionally fed by both sides. It withers and dies when it is not. Will we pass the test next time? I am continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for July 15th, 2023. In community, Diamondback, MHS football, YMCA help make summer reading fun. For the third summer, Diamondback Energy, the Midland High Bulldog football team, and the YMCA came together for a fun summer reading event. With books and ice pops provided by Diamondback, the high school football players read to the students at the YMCA. Each student received a couple books to take home to help foster a love for reading. We love when we get to work with other organizations in the community, especially when it involves an educational component. We know these kids look up to the football players, and it's great to have them on board to read to the kids and keep their minds engaged throughout the summer months, Diamondback Corporate Affairs Representative Aaron Bailey said. This is a partnership that all organizations hope continues for years to come. Hi, I am continuing the Midland Reporter Telegram for July 15th, 2023. in Community, Mother and Son Celebrate the Same College Graduation Date by Rebecca Bell. When Angelique Davis started taking classes at Midland College in the fall of 1995, right after graduating from Coleman High School, she did not plan on it being 27 years before she would finally receive an Associate of Science degree in Criminal Justice. I had my first son, Michael, when I was 17, so I graduated from high school as a single mom, Davis said. I wanted to be like all my peers and go to college after graduating high school. I enrolled at Midland College. I was working part-time and going to school full-time along with caring for my toddler. Then I became pregnant with my second son, Stephen. I was young, had two small boys, and not enough time in the day, so I had to quit school. I felt defeated. By the time she was 23, Davis's third son, Isaiah, was born. In 2007, she started what would become a successful career working as a sales rep. Even though I had a good job, I still wanted to complete my degree, but just couldn't find the time, she said. The opportunity to continue her higher education pursuits came with the COVID pandemic in 2020. I was working from home and my children were grown, Davis explained. I really had no excuse for not going back to school. One day, I decided to visit with Midland College advisor to see if my credits from the 1990s were still valid. After talking with my advisor, I realized that it wasn't really all that complicated. My advisor told me that all my previous credits would count. They had not gone anywhere, they were still there. So I started taking classes again. The funny thing is that Isaiah was also taking courses at Midland College at the same time. Davis's youngest son, Isaiah Ramirez, actually started his college career while still in high school as a student in the Midland College, Midland ISD College and Careers Academy, taking dual credit emergency medical services courses. That's when I discovered that I had a passion for helping people, Ramirez said. After high school graduation, I went through the Fire Academy, started working for the Midland Fire Department, and continued pursuing a degree in emergency medical services. I remember being so proud of my mom when she decided to start back to school. I admired her motivation, and it rubbed off on me. Davis said that unlike when she was first at Midland College in the late 1990s, this time she was able to take advantage of the mostly online courses. Online courses were great for me, Davis said. It would have been difficult for me to attend face-to-face classes while working full-time. Ramirez also took advantage of online courses, except for his EMT paramedic hands-on skills classes. Firemen have crazy shifts, he explained. We work 48 hours on and then 96 hours off, so that means that every 6 days we have a different schedule. It's hard to schedule face-to-face classes. Online classes require a lot of self-discipline, but they are great for people like me who have jobs where the hours aren't 8 to 5. They were never enrolled in the same classes, but Davis and Ramirez continued to give each other encouragement while attending Midland College as part-time students. It wasn't until fall of 2022 that the mother and son duo realized they would be graduating at the same time. In May 2023, they both walked the stage during the Midland College commencement ceremony at the Al G. Langford Chaparral Center. When asked what advice they had for people who may be in similar situations, Davis said she would tell students in their 30s, 40s, and beyond not to be afraid of the enrollment and application process. I was terrified when I made that first visit with my advisor, she said. However, the enrollment and advising staff navigated me through the whole process. Ramirez said his advice would be to find good people who share the same interests. When I started taking these first EMT classes in high school, I was at a time in life when a lot of young men started to go down the wrong path, he said. Taking classes that I liked and making friends with people who were in the same classes and had the same interests helped keep me out of trouble and gave me a career goal. Davis is continuing with her sales rep job, and this fall she will begin pursuing a bachelor's degree in Homeland Security and Cybercrime from Sul Ross State University. Ramirez is also continuing his job with the Midland Fire Department and is now a firefighter paramedic working out of Station 2 on the corner of Florida and Terrell Streets in Midland. In the fall, he will begin taking courses toward a bachelor's degree in health and science from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. Both Davis and Ramirez said that they will be able to once again take advantage of online classes.
This is the Dear Abby column. Boyfriend rages when demands for sex are denied. Dear Abby, I'm a 37-year-old stay-at-home mother of two teens. I've been in a relationship with a guy I'll call Doug for 4 years. I feel he only wants me here for sex. If I say no, he either tries to force it or verbally abuses me. He tells me if I don't give him sex, I need to leave so he can bring another woman to do it. He will destroy my belongings or call me names. He says it's my fault that he does that to me. I'm not sure what to do here. Is it my fault? Signed, Bad Scene in the Midwest. Dear Bad Scene, when a boyfriend, or husband for that matter, forces their partner to have sex, it isn't foreplay, it is rape. That Doug emotionally abuses you or destroys your property if you refuse to accommodate him is not your fault. You made me do it is something abusers say when they want to avoid taking responsibility for their actions. What you need to do now is get out of there as safely as you can. Place a confidential call to the National Domestic Violence Hotline, 800-799-7233, and ask for help formulating a plan to safely escape your abuser, because that is what this man is. Dear Abby, a casual friend and neighbor started doing the books at the company where I work. This means she knows my income, which she didn't before. We live in a small town and are on several committees together outside of work, including a board for a local charity and the PTO for our kids' school. Now that she knows how much I make, she's on my case to be, quote, more generous in my donations to these groups, and is spreading misinformation about my financial situation. For example, when the PTO fundraiser fell flat, she told the group I could make up the difference out of my pocket. The thing is, she doesn't have the full picture. I donate to organizations she doesn't know about and help to support my oldest nephew, who has a disability and struggles to get by on his own. For now, I'm doing as much as I feel comfortable with, and I don't want to have to divulge all the details of my financial life to get her off my back. Asking her to stop harassing me has led to more public statements about my stinginess. Now other people in town are starting to ask me to donate to their causes, having gotten the impression I'm hiding deep pockets and have no obligations. How do I get this to stop? I worry about getting the wrong reputation in this community. Signed, In a Pickle in the South. Dear In a Pickle, financial information is supposed to be kept quiet, and for a bookkeeper to leak yours is unforgivable, unethical, and perhaps illegal. You should have gone to your employer and reported the woman the first time she hit you up for money and discussed your financial status with your neighbors. Now that the cat is out of the bag, I hope you will discuss this with an attorney and determine what your legal options are. As to anyone who approaches you about contributing to their favorite causes, do not go into detail about what you are funding. Just say no. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.